The following is paid for by the Coalition for a Better Hollywood. For decades, Big Movie has had Hollywood studios in their back pocket. They spend millions to get you to spend billions on movies that are nothing more than sequels, reboots, remakes, reimaginings, Oscar cliche and January releases. Big movie lobbyists have all but ensured original film ideas are ignored, forgotten, or maybe not even real. Are they feature films? Are they quality flicks? Are they real motion pictures? Your soon-to-be, if not already favorite movie podcast stands with the little movies. Help put an end to Big Movie's cinematic censorship and listen to the pop-up film cast every Tuesday wherever honest hard-working podcasts can be found. We are the Pop-Up Film Cast, a proud member of the Podfix Network, and we support this message.
Where they talk and it's real casual and they have a conversation, kind of like this.
All right, we're going to do that one more time. We're going to track it. Let's track it. Hello and welcome to The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I am Phil Rude, the dad.
I'm Austin Rude. I'm also the dad. To an adorable cat.
Really? I thought you just had George.
That's the cat I'm talking about. You might be confused because you would call him an annoying cat.
Very annoying cat, yes. Yeah.
Anyway, I am actually the son on this show, and...
I am the landlord. You are the gay tailor.
The landlady? I know there's a landlord in this, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we watch movies and we talk about it. That's the intro. That is what we do. That's right.
And boy, did we watch a movie this week.
But did we watch anything else is the first question.
Ooh. You want me to... You asked, so should I go?
Yeah, you go.
No. I watched a couple episodes of Batman the Animated Series. Last night, I watched 90 Day Fiancé with your mother because... Now I'm into that trash TV.
You can only live in Florida for so long without...
I hate reality TV, but something about the train wreck of 90 Day Fiancé is... I can't look away. And
there's something so engaging about watch... It's like Walmart.
It kind of, yes. There's a... And look, I take no pride in this. I take no pride in the fact that I sit there on Sunday night for 2 hours and judge people. I like to say it's my political mind that is judging our immigration system that this is somehow a more valid way into the country is entering a horribly dysfunctional marriage.
That's right. You're exercising your political activism.
That's right. I'm politically
you're monitoring the situation
via reality television.
And while I'm at it, I'm just going to go ahead and order a bride and help out.
some poor Ukrainian girl. Boy, there's some problems on that show. But
that's actually something covered on Shameless.
Yeah,
sex trafficking and like mail,
sure.
Mail order brides and stuff.
Yeah, this is less
dramatized.
I don't think this is like straight up sex trafficking in the way that like some mail order bride. These are like some weird online dating kind of. I think women trying to get to the States and. Largely women. There are men immigrants on this show, too. I don't want to get into 90 Day Fiancé. It's garbage TV. But
you brought it up.
Yes, I mean, I don't want to get into the minutiae of it, but do I feel bad for admitting that out loud? Anyway, I've spent most of last week working on a screenplay. I was in the NYC Midnight Screenplay, short screenplay contest. To complete it. The deadline was this past Saturday. I finished it. I turned it in. I feel good about it. And now we wait like 7-8 weeks for results while they read.
That's
1,300 screenplay. Well, I mean, there's a lot of entries. And,
we'll get 1,300 readers then. It should be a piece of cake.
Exactly. Exactly. But that's it. That's what I've been up to.
Well, while you were watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians or whatever.
Hold on. I will not be judged in this way.
I this week rediscovered Disenchanted, or Disenchantment, I believe.
Is the Matt Groening thing.
Yes. Creator of The Simpsons and Futurama. And it seems every show he creates is better than the last.
Because, really? Wow.
Yeah, big Futurama fan at one point.
First of all, you're throwing some huge shade on The Simpsons right now.
Have you watched season 508? Because no one else has.
I'm not counting anything outside of seasons 3 through 12. That's the meat of The Simpsons.
Okay, then sure.
I'm going to argue that was Groening's top involvement with the show.
You know, I still think Futurama tops that.
Futurama is a great show. And I have not even seen the entirety of Futurama. I've not even seen the entirety of Disenchantment. It's only, like, what, 3 seasons?
Yeah. They're on season 3 right now. And, like, it feels like each season brings new world building and, like, new characters. It's really cool. There's all sorts of things going on, and there's, like, a bigger plot. It's kind of turning into, like, a Chosen One story, which I'm, like, a little unsure about. Yeah, but it's a fairy tale.
It is a fairy tale.
It's working with the tropes of the genre, which is, I think, what they're going for.
I don't think tropes are necessarily bad either. Like, you can do a trope in a unique way and sort of put a new spin on it, or an entertaining spin on it.
Well, the first season of Disenchantment, this is going to have spoilers, pulls a reverse on the evil stepmother, because King Zog marries the, like, fish woman or whatever,
yes.
And then she ends up being really nice, and instead it's Bean's own mother
that is
a nightmare.
Terrible, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that now that you're talking about it. And I liked the show, but I think I finished season 2. I don't know why I never went back to it, though. I think I just got busy.
Yeah, they had a long hiatus between seasons.
And it took, like, a season to really kind of find the footing, which a lot of shows do. Especially with this is, like, kind of Matt Groening's first show that had, like, an overarching story. It wasn't just episodic.
Yeah, the first part was definitely just them trying to lay the groundwork. But it's still entertaining.
Yeah.
And I think the art has gotten...
Oh, it's great.
It started out great, but it is, like, so beautiful. There's an episode in season 3 that is, like, on the water, and there's these visuals with, like, reflections. It's just beautiful. It's stunning.
Yeah, it's a great-looking show. And,
And it's got hand-drawn stuff in there, right?
It's definitely, I
think it's a mix of animation styles.
The Simpsons and Futurama did this too with, it was, I say traditional, but like frame-by-frame drawn animation. It's not traditional. I don't think it's done on paper or cells anymore. Either way, they draw it on a Cintiq. But then when they, like, have to make, like in Futurama, when the Planet Express ship would take off, that was, like, a 3D model. You could tell by the way it kind of moved.
Okay.
And would have to... Anything that was, like, complicated got...
And swiveled, and you got, like, a full view of it.
Got sort of a 3D animation treatment. But it kind of... They did a really good job of, like, usually blending it with everything else in the...
Yeah, Disenchantment is a little more obvious about it. But not in a bad way. It's just like, oh, you can tell, like, what's what.
Yeah.
It kind of becomes a, like, collage of things.
But it's a busy show artistically, so it's, I mean, there's a lot going on in any given frame of that show.
Right.
Like,
little gags and everything.
The sets are pretty elaborate. Like, the backgrounds are fairly elaborate. They have, like, a whole kingdom drawn out, you know what I mean?
They have multiple kingdoms.
People in the background, yeah. And it sort of leans into the world building. And then there's just, like, the writing of that show is really smart and kind of existential.
Yeah,
stuff.
The,
you know,
the main trio, yeah, with Bean and Lucy and
Elfo.
Elfo.
Yeah. I'm Elfo. Yeah. It's just, so, but like when they go to hell and, you know, right. And it just.
God, will you smite me? No, you suck. And then he just.
Yeah. I mean, pretty interesting show. I need to get back to it.
Yeah. They need to make more and hopefully not, cancel it too early like Futurama or leave it too long times. Like yeah, the Simpsons, like the Simpsons, yeah. Find the middle ground for third try. It's the right one.
The Simpsons at this point is just like a legacy show. Like, they're just keeping it on because it was like the foundation of the Fox network. It was there for that, and it's sort of the one thing that has survived through the entirety of the network's existence, really.
Right. This is a little bit of a rabbit hole, but I'm going to dive into it because I think you're right about that. And it's kind of like the opposite of Doctor Who. Yes, I'm bringing it back to Doctor Who. I always do. That's doesn't matter. At
old whore view on Twitter.
But Doctor Who is a show that like evolves. It's been on for 58 years. Right. And so like. But The Simpsons did the opposite. It wanted to preserve what it is while it continued going. So, like, they've kind of stuck themselves to where if they tried to get, like, a new creative team and, like, revamp the show, no one's going to like it.
I disagree with all of this.
Really?
I think The Simpsons has changed, and that's what the problem is.
But I think they've turned into like
and they have
caricatures
had...
of themselves.
Oh, they, for sure. They, that's how they've changed.
They,
I didn't
they,
say
they went inward when they should have gone outward.
I don't think they've changed for the better, and they have had new creative teams. I mean, that's a show on that long. It's new producers, it's new writers, it's new animators. I mean, there's turnover in a show that's on for 30 years. I think they have evolved. They just haven't evolved for the better. They've tried to get, the last few times I've seen it, they've tried to be edgier, which doesn't work. You know, The Simpsons is not an edgy show. You know, it's a family.
Why is Lisa doing crack?
It's a, well, I mean, like, yeah. The last Halloween episode I saw of theirs has been years ago, and there's like this, there's a parody of Avatar. Not the Airbender, Avatar,
the blue people,
the James Cameron movie. And Bart is playing like the main character. And they have a weird thing where it plays out like the movie where he hooks up with the alien girl. And then he makes mention of it later, like, I won't let you destroy the planet that I got laid on. And it's just hearing, it's like Bart is still a 10-year-old boy. I understand this is a Halloween episode where anything goes and it's parody, but I don't want to see, like, sexualized Bart Simpson. Like, yeah. This, you know, like...
He's not Morty from Rick and Morty.
It was... Right. It was very... It just... I know... And the argument is always going to be, like, it's a Halloween episode, anything goes. It's like, but he's still a 10-year-old boy in the context of... Like, and it was this kind of, like... And I feel like they did that in regular episodes, too. Not to that extreme, but it was this attempt to make things... edgier. Kind of after the movie, they started sort of going in that direction of, we're going to be a little bit edgier. We're going to be, and it's like, no, that's not what you guys do.
I think the movie was the last good bit of Simpsons.
Kind of, it was kind of, yeah, about where I got off the train. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's our rabbit hole for the day.
Matt Groening minute. Ooh, new segment. Oh, every week. Yeah.
Well, what's our next segment?
Our next segment, we're going to talk about what we actually watched this. And I think we can tie this into Disenchantment. Or is it Disenchanted?
See, I don't know.
I don't know. Well, we can tie it into that Matt Groening show about the fantasy world. This week, we watched the 2004 martial arts comedy Kung Fu Hustle. This movie is about a wannabe gangster in the 1940s Shanghai wanting to be a member of the notorious Axe Gang. The film stars Stephen Chow, who also wrote and directed and produced, Hua Yuen as landlord, Chu Yuen as landlady, Danny Kwok Kwan Chan as Brother Sum, and Su Lung Bruce Lung as the Beast. I'm sorry if I mispronounced any of those names. I am trying my best, and Asian names sometimes come in different orders. Mm-hmm. Names get I'm never sure. Any corrections, I am open to them, but
we can barely pronounce English. These, names,
I do struggle with English pronunciation.
Language, and, for yeah. sure.
But this, yes, this was, I read on, according to IMDb, this was the widest release foreign movie in the United States of all time at the time of its release.
I didn't know it was a big release in America.
I didn't know either. I knew this movie had a cult following. I didn't know it was that big a deal, but
I'm looking up the cult then, and I'm drinking the Kool-Aid
I want that Kool-Aid.
That's a cult I want to be in.
I tweeted out last week that we were watching this movie because it is leaving Netflix, and
it has left Netflix. If you're listening to this,
it is gone. That was the whole thing, and the flood of responses I got of people like, that's awesome, I love this movie, this is great, gifts, people celebrating that we were, and when I said we had never seen it, like, people were like happy that we were going to watch this movie. And now that I've seen it, I completely understand why.
I get it. And I looked up Stephen Chow, uh-huh. who... is apparently a well-known director, and he's done other similar comedies. I don't know if they're similar in, like, what's it called? Like, theme.
Right.
I don't know if they're all samurais or kung fu movies, but,
different country.
Those are totally different things. Yes. my point is he's well-known for this, like, slapstick kind of comedy.
Right.
That he does so well in this movie.
Do you have his page pulled up there?
Sorry, no. I am never prepared.
No, me neither.
In my research, I also found out that the landlady...
I saw some of this too.
She is a Bond lady.
Man with the Golden Gun, I believe. She was in that.
Okay.
And that's an older Roger Moore movie. But yeah, she has a huge history in, like, martial arts cinema as a stunt woman and actor, director, like, super impressive.
That's even cooler that they have her playing this, like, mystical character who...
Yeah. And she also apparently put on 40 pounds for this movie by she... reportedly adopted the sumo wrestler diet for a period to pack on weight.
That's so funny, because there's even some comments about her weight, like, in the movie. She's not like a big
fat person.
Right. I was like, what are you talking yes. about? That's normal.
It's so weird. But when you see, like, other footage of her, I looked up some YouTube footage of her. And... she is, like, a very slight woman, like, and her, you know, especially, like, her younger days. She's, like, in her 50s when she did this movie.
Right.
But in her younger days, like, really? Like, this kind of tiny woman who's doing these badass kung fu weapons and just this really kind of kick-ass actor, stunt woman. I love how in all this Chinese cinema, like, you can be a stunt person and the main actor. That's just kind of like,
right.
you get to be in a movie if you can also do your own stunts and they can kind of save money. I think that's how it all started, was like, oh, you can do both? Perfect. You know, like, you know, we don't have to hire an extra stunt person or something like that.
Yeah.
But I got Stephen Chow as a Let's see. Oh, that's his acting credits. He was in Shaolin Soccer. Let me find his directing. New King of Comedy. Journey to the West. CJ7. Kung Fu Hustle. Shaolin Soccer. King of Comedy. The God of Cookery. Forbidden City Cop from Beijing with Love.
These are all very interesting title names.
Yeah.
Like, I can feel his style through watching this movie and, like, just hearing all that. Like I can kind of tell, like, the direction that he goes in.
Yeah, there's a weird, like, Chinese mysticism, it looks like, in a lot of these. Journey to the West, you know, an aspiring Buddhist hero tries to protect a village from three demons. And they're labeled as comedies. He has, like, this action... Mm-hmm. comedy,
but it's also kind of sincere. There's like moments to it.
Absolutely, there's real character moments, and I wanted to get to this because this is the Disenchantment connection. I think is that there's all of this silliness. I mean, this is Kung Fu Hustle is a Looney Tunes cartoon. I mean.
Quite literally.
Yes. Like, there are things that are so cartoonish, like the legs spinning around while they're running. That's a Roadrunner move, you know, like...
Right. The being stabbed a bunch of times.
Yeah. And... being bit by cobras and just having the swollen lips and, you know, like... all of this stuff is directly out of, like, this slapstick zany cartoon, but there are... real character moments. You give a shit about the characters. Mm-hmm. That it's not like a Looney Tunes cartoon in that people can die. Like...
And do die.
And do die. The Kung Fu... A lot of the Kung Fu stuff in it, it's super stylized, but it's also, like, good Kung Fu scenes. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like...
I find the Kung Fu scenes so interesting because, like, they're... taken seriously and they're really intense and awesome, like, especially yeah. the Axe Gang,
yeah.
like, what a group of guys, but
they're awesome,
but I think, like, there is some silliness to it, like, even in the it's played as serious, but, like, the idea there, like, the what was it, I don't even know, the musical instrument that cut
oh,
things
yeah.
The scene where you see the guy be beheaded on the shadow
don't even get me started on how freaking good that was.
It was so cool and so silly and so awesome, like, all at once. Like, I don't know how it all works tonally, but it does.
That cat was the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. I'm not joking.
I know.
Almost stopped the movie so I could go outside and take a breath of air.
Like, I need to think about
this. I need to reflect on what I just saw. That was incredible. And then to follow that up with a Chinese guitar throwing ghost swords at people. Something so silly, but so, like you said, sincere at the same time. Like, they had to fight these ghost swords or they were going to die.
And they don't play it like a joke.
No.
Like in the... Like all the other jokes. They play very serious.
There's this really... the rule... I think they establish rules in this thing. Like... you know, yes, we are going to exaggerate everything and it's going to be crazy over the top and ridiculous, but you're also going to buy into the character. Like, mm-hmm. we're keeping that consistent throughout. Like, she throws the landlord out of the window at the very beginning.
Yes.
And he's hurt, and it establishes, yes, this is insane and over the top, but he's also, like, hurt he's, like, just laying there for hours. And
I think one of my favorite jokes is she throws the tea, or the flower pot on him. And then later, the whole complex is being raided by a gang, and he hides by just piling dirt around his head.
Shit in the dirt around him. Like, yeah. But I also, I mean, that also sets up this big reveal later that they are like the best kung fu masters. Mm-hmm. And it's just like so... It somehow feels like they made it up as they went along, and also everything makes sense.
That's what... they had like these elaborate backgrounds for characters. Like, this was literally Helen of Troy. Like, they said that. Like, they...
Yeah, I don't know that she was actually... It was just a one line, but like, yeah, like
this weird thing. But like, I was totally willing to just buy
the mythology of...
Right.
Right, yeah.
Like, when the guys started fighting out of nowhere, I genuinely thought like, oh, these are people who have never fought before, and suddenly like the power of Kung Fu has taken them or something. Right. And like, we're just going to go with it. Like, I was prepared for that because the movie just... moved things along in such a way.
And you would have kind of accepted that. Because, yeah. Like, at the end of the day, Singh, the kind of main character, like, that's what happens to him, is he basically has the power of Kung Fu in him all along.
Right.
You know, but also, like, at the very beginning, he wants to pretend to be a gangster, but he's afraid to fight. Like, I love when he keeps calling people out. You, old man. And he comes out and the guy's just ripped. And he's like, no, not you. And then he's like,
you short guy.
The guy's like 7 feet tall.
I think that scene was the point where I realized like, oh, this is what the movie's going
to
be.
Well, it was starting to get extreme at that point, but it was also like, at that point it was, like Jackie Chan level, like 70s, 80s, Jackie Chan, like that was Jackie Chan's hook, in the 80s and 90s was, he was like the clown prince of martial arts. Like, that's kind of how they build him sometimes. Cause he was funny. As he fought, he would do like weird little comedy beats. That were like, it was all, everybody liked Jackie Chan, and I guess some He's stuff like, has come out about Jackie Chan recently, that where I guess nobody likes Jackie Chan anymore, but at the time everybody liked Jackie Chan because he was good at fighting, but he also didn't take himself so seriously,
like a light charisma about it.
Yeah, it was all in fun. Like, mm-hmm. when he was joking around, you were just sort of like, oh, okay, this is all just a good time. Like, that's what it is.
Right. That's what this movie is. It's a fun time. It's...
Yeah.
It's not like... I don't know. I have this perception of Kung Fu movies that they're a bit, like, stuffy when it's not... When the action scenes aren't going on. Like, the action is... crazy over the top, but then like the rest of the movie is just kind of like the nitty gritty drama of like, I need to find the love of my life or restore my honor. And yeah, like,
there's especially like early Kung Fu stuff was all just about how do we get to the next fight, and they would put like a story in there, and it wasn't typically acted very well. You know what I mean? I think Kung Fu movies, like a lot of things, have come a long way. I've seen some really great Chinese action movies that really have some cool, like Hero with Jet Li. Like, that's a really cool movie. Like, and it's all presented in this really cool way. It's about characters, and it's about, God, it's about all kinds of things. But it's basically different stories rolled into one. It's kind of sophisticated storytelling, but also kind of simple.
Interesting.
But this one as well, I think, did you feel like this was almost just loosely connected little vignettes? Like, the scenes almost just stood by themselves. And then there was sort of a... And I don't mean this as a bag, because... A lot of the scenes were there to be jokes. A lot of them were there to be just self-contained fight scenes. And it was hard to tell who the main character was.
I think it's designed so that if you took any scene from this movie out of context, like, maybe you won't get, like, the full meaning of things, but, like, you'll still get the jokes and everything. Yeah. And you'll still enjoy it.
That's what it feels like, I think.
Like every scene, like, there's the main character, but then every scene has its own individual main character.
Yeah.
Like, whether you're following the couple, chosen the, one, right, or
the landlord and the landlady, or the brother Sum, who the gangster boss. Like, there's a whole scene where
his
hair catches on fire. It has nothing to do with anything else in the movie.
I actually read that as, like, his villain comeuppance.
But it just keeps going. Like, you just think they're gonna put the hair out, and it's just like, it just keeps burning.
I think he just died. I think that the car burst into flames. I don't think there's any coming back from that.
But let's take a break. Let's take a break and we'll come back and get into the rest of this movie.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Mouse.
I'm Weens.
We have the Mouse and Weens podcast.
Mouse and Weens.
I'm a big sister in San Diego with kids, and I'm married.
And I have no friends. No, I'm just kidding. No, I do. I have friends. I just don't have any boyfriends or love. Anyway, Mouse and Weens podcast. You should listen to it.
Yeah, it's not really depressing. Fun. We talk about family stories, life and love, and kids, and all the things you're interested in. We promise.
Yay!
Celebrities in Hollywood too.
Poke your little turtle head out and come listen to us.
Mouse and Weens. Bye.
Hey, this is Kate. I'm a forensic psychologist and crisis clinician, and I collect stories. Everything from true crime to trauma to parenthood. There's a lot more in common between depression and sociopathy, or between serial killers and podcasters, than you might think. Are you sure you really want to know? This is Ignorance Was Bliss at iwbpodcast.com and iwbpodcast on social media.
And we're back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. How was your break?
It's pretty good. I'm really trying to make a joke here, but it's not gonna land. So
did you maybe learn kung fu over the break?
See, I'm just gonna explain it, because my joke was gonna be I was gonna do the thing where I relate it to the movie, but I was actually gonna relate it to Kung Fu Panda and describe the plot of that movie.
We're not talking about,
but I know, that was the joke, but I felt it would have gone over people's heads, because it's a bad joke. Anyway, now that we've ruined the whole episode,
Jack Black, single minute. Right?
Yes.
What do you got?
Kung Fu Hustle. So,
yes, that is the movie we watched.
I'm just going to stop talking.
No, you had something to say.
I did want to talk about the comedy in this movie and how it is both, like, the humor is both homophobic and homoerotic. Like, I'm getting mixed messages when you make fun of gay people and then also show a lot of male butts. What am I supposed to take away from this? No, I wasn't offended by the jokes in this movie.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think this movie is homophobic. I don't think everything that makes fun of a gay person is homophobic. I think sometimes that is meant to make fun of people who are homophobic. Mm-hmm.
I think some of the jokes in this
the gay character was very empowered in this movie.
Yes, like, they made fun of femininity, I think. Yes. Is the
a little bit, yeah,
right, but they also made fun of everyone, like the buck-toothed girl,
everybody. And I wonder, I mean, this is 2004, this is 15 years ago, and it's also Chinese, and that's not a dig against Asian Americans or Chinese people or Asian people, not Asian American or Asian American people, but just the sensibility country to country, you know. is maybe they're not as sensitive about that. Maybe everything is a little more fair game over there. And there's not like public outcry. Like if you were to put that in an American movie,
right?
You know, it would be like, those of us with buck teeth take mad offense to the, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing either. I'm just saying different countries, different sensibilities. I don't think anything in this movie was worth getting upset over. But you're right. They do sort of make fun of everybody. There's a dude walking around with his pants pulled down almost the entire movie.
Right.
There's...
I saw a Reddit theory, or it wasn't a theory, but it was a thread, and some guy was like, hey, I just watched Kung Fu Hustle, and I'm wondering if there's any, like, symbolism with all the saggy pants, and, you know, there's just this reoccurring theme, and a guy was like, I think he just thinks butts are funny.
I think that's a lot of what it is. I think there's just a lot of, in the same way that, like, people falling down is funny. Like, there's a real sort of simplistic humor in this. I want to call it, like, juvenile or, like, a little kid's sense of humor. But it still works. Like,
there's something, like,
silliness.
Right. When you're doing a joke like that, it's very easy to be annoying. And I can't pinpoint, like, the specifics of what makes an immature joke not work. Like, you know, like there's a very clear difference.
I think, I kind of think it has something to do with like, this movie would make a very immature joke and then move on to something completely different. It didn't sit there and hammer on, it wasn't Family Guy. It wasn't.
It didn't keep the gag
juvenile
running.
Joke after juvenile joke to where it's like, oh, this is for middle schoolers. You know what I mean? Like this would make a joke like that and then move on to like something else that led into an actual kung fu fight scene or go into like an actual character moment.
Yeah.
Or they would, the way he balanced it, like the, he goes and stands, when the main character has that flashback when he's a little kid, and he's standing up for that mute girl.
Yeah.
To the bullies. And they, you know, like, that's a real character moment. And then, to humiliate him, they all pee on him. Like, and so, it is just like, yes, if the entire movie had been people peeing on each other, of course, like, that gets old. But, like...
I think that's called porn.
This movie would be, it's not available on Netflix anymore, but it is available on Pornhub.
Netflix XXX.
Yes. There's just a really, and I think that speaks to like how the action movie or the action scenes played in this against the ridiculous comedy is it's just balanced perfectly.
Right. I mean, that's part of like, martial arts, isn't it? Like they even have like a yin yang in here. Like it's balance. Yeah. It's you're balancing comedy with seriousness.
That's a really great point. Yes. All the elements, the action, there's parts in here that are just straight up parody. Like the blood, the blood in the prison is straight out of The Shining. That's the Shining elevator blood.
Well, they have Roadrunner in there.
Yes, there's
the line from Spider-Man. This is great.
Oh, yeah. This would have been right about the time of the Raimi Spider-Man movies, too.
Yeah, I caught that. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not a coincidence. Like, that's word for word.
There's a lot of American influence in it. I don't know that much about Stephen Chow, other than, you know, like, I've heard of a couple of those films. But, like, he clearly is influenced by a lot of American cinema. There's the there's the one shot of Singh and the, I don't remember her name, the mute girl who runs the ice cream thing.
Did they give her a name?
I think she does have a name, but I can't remember what it is. But, like,
Lollipop Girl.
He's holding her, and then they pull back, and it's in front of a... Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movie poster where they're in the same pose.
Yeah.
Like, and then like the American suits, you know, the gangsters are all American style gangsters. Yeah,
they look like 1920s in, New
right,
York.
Right. And so it, yes, they're all wearing like zoot suits from the 20s, even though it's the 40s, you know, it's China, it's dip, but yeah, it's very clearly, yeah, a Looney Tunes.
It's like you took Western cartoon comedy and Eastern fight movies and like blended them together.
Right. It is, to take it to Jackie Chan again, this was after he had started doing movies like the Chinese movies of, in the 90s, Americans started bringing Chinese movies over. Like John Woo became really big and Jackie Chan became really big, all this stuff. So then they started making like American studios just started hiring these guys. So then they were making American movies with big budgets. And none of their shit was as good.
Were they still making it in China, or was it the American companies copying them? Or are they like distributing it?
Well, like, it's like they would hire John Woo to come over and direct American action movies. So like we got things like...
Oh, that's like... That's like hiring the Baby Driver, Edgar Wright, to write Ant-Man. Like,
yeah, it yes, that's a great analogy, honestly, because things like Face Off with Nicolas Cage, and don't get me wrong, Face Off is a fun movie, but in the canon of like John Woo movies, it's not even close to something like The Killer, which is crazy good. You know what I mean?
It's a cheap imitation.
Yes. Jackie Chan came over. He did like Rush Hour. He did Shanghai Noon.
No. It's. I'm going to take that back. It's not an imitation. It's like a bad recreation.
It's like you get... It's like they were better with less money. With the... You know, it's like they had too much money. They had too much to work with. And so they went really big. But instead of going really big in the way they were used to, something about it just, it came off as cheesy. And it's like, you have too much money to make a cheesy movie. You know what I mean? Like,
God. For all this money, it should have been better.
John Woo made this movie called Hard Target. And Hard Target has this cult love for it. And that movie has always been absolute.
Don't piss them off, Dad. Never piss off garbage. Cult movie
that
fans.
That is a garbage movie. It's and I like John Woo. But he never made as good a stuff in America as he made in Hong Kong.
Maybe you just don't get it, man.
I guess I don't.
I don't know. I do think there is something to that, though.
But
when
this is, to bring it back to where I started, this is American influence. Instead of America bringing a Chinese director to America to make something for an American audience, this is a Chinese director bringing American influence to China to make his movie on his terms. And I think that blend of it is what makes this work so well. You know, it's like why it appeals to Americans and Chinese people. Why this is like his beloved movie.
Well, I was going to ask, because this is a cult audience, but like, is it mixed? Is it truly mixed? Or is it really more of an American movie?
Like, I don't know.
Like, do you think the fans of this are more American?
I would not be surprised if this was like a really big movie in China, too. Because I don't think this is purely driven by American influence. I think there's American style in this. And it's pulling from, like you said, Looney Tunes, The Shining, these reference points in America. But if you don't get them, like, it doesn't, I don't think it matters. If a Chinese audience doesn't know The Shining, then that blood coming down the hallway, it's still very relevant to the beast, to this mad killer.
It's still a cool entrance.
Who is essentially death, you know? But I think also what he stylizes in this is I think there's a little bit of parody of like Chinese wireworks movie, you know, like the flying. If you ever see like these Chinese martial arts movies where people are legitimately flying.
Right. Or running up walls.
Yes. And he's kind of saying, this is extreme and silly. Let's lean into it and over stylize everything. And still, it's almost like a parody of that. This is how I'm reading it. It's almost a parody of like traditional Chinese martial arts movies and actual Chinese martial arts movies. Like
it's more of a like, it's like a light ribbing, but it's they're teasing them.
Yes,
but paying also doing respect.
It. Yeah. Yeah, and making it sincere.
It's so cool. It feels like they're moving in water because like they'll punch each other and move back, but then they'll circle around like with this invisible like gravity.
That's the wireworks style. Mm-hmm. Like that's so cool.
I remember there was one guy and he was like blown back and he kind of arced and then right when he's about to hit the ground, he goes low and then he snakes back up.
It's like a leaf.
It was so cool.
It's really it's really wild what this movie ended up being. We talked just briefly after we watched it yesterday, and I said that I was seeing all these GIFs and all these things about it, and it's like Dancing Gangsters. And I kind of was like, is this a musical?
If you had accidentally signed us up for a long musical.
I would have watched it. And if this had had like song and dance numbers in it and still been this movie, I think I still would have enjoyed it. But I had no idea what to expect about this movie. And even in the beginning when like the Axe Gang first shows up.
Yeah.
When the Crocodile Gang leader is walking out of the police station and the Axe Gang comes in and they're all like in these lines. I'm like, oh, this is going to be like the first dance number. And I really kind of
thought break out like into song.
West Side Story kind of.
It would be kind of cool.
But so I didn't have much expectation or knowledge of what this movie was about. What about you?
Well, that's what I told you kind of about like what my perception of kung fu movies is like the big action with the stuffy drama.
Right.
That was kind of and I should be clear, like I've never seen a kung fu movie. I've seen like clips and stuff.
This was your first kung fu movie?
This was my first, wow. Yeah. So this is an introduction to a lot and probably maybe not the best one if you want to like really admire an art form, but
I don't know. I mean, do you feel like, were you lost at any point? Did you?
No, I wasn't lost, but there's also like they, in this, they talk about like the different techniques and schools of,
yeah.
And I'm like 99.9% sure all of that was like made up, like
there
the
are,
Toad School and I don't know what they're referencing. Like it's clear that it's like a parody of something, but like I don't know what that is. Like maybe there's different schools,
there's
all
different
across
styles
China.
Of kung fu. At one time, there were like a lot of schools, mm-hmm. almost like clans.
So maybe it is a big deal what you come from, and that's what they're.
Yeah,
kind
but
of talking
I don't
about.
Think I don't think that would have left you behind, right? I mean,
it didn't leave me behind, but I'm saying like. Like it doesn't make this movie worse for it being my first, but I'm saying like maybe it's not the best representation of kung fu
or the first best introduction.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like maybe I could have learned more from a more serious movie.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of
I still enjoyed the movie and I followed it well.
Yeah, I don't think that's what I was getting at. I don't know that you need to have a huge background in Asian cinema to appreciate this movie. I think this movie stands very much on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, if you want to see a really well done kung fu movie, watch Ip Man.
How many butts are in it? How many butt jokes? Boy, or any running one, on air?
There's one extended peeing on people scene, but that's it.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't think there's a lot of wire work in that movie. It's just, it is based on an actual guy in China who ran like a kung fu school and then ended up fighting like the historical fiction. Yes. They've made like 10 sequels that I think are all bullshit, but like the first one is based loosely on this guy's life, and it's actually just a really good like historical fiction action movie in the kung fu genre. But yeah, I think I'm glad that you having no background in that didn't take away from this movie. I'm glad this movie stood on its own, stood in its own box, and was enough of its own thing. Because I think that's really important to say about this movie. This movie has its own identity.
Right. It might parody things, but it's never like trying to be them.
Right.
It's just like, this is a gag you weren't expecting, kind of a deal.
Yeah, I think so. This makes me want to see more of Stephen Chow's movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if this is his style of directing, and he is enough of an individual to make something like this, then I am curious to see what else he makes.
I did hear general consensus that this is his best movie.
I heard that as well.
But
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the others are bad.
Exactly.
And especially if the ones he made before this is like him perfecting his style of doing things, I think that'll be an interesting journey to see.
The Thing is John Carpenter's best movie by far. But also, Halloween is great. Also, They Live. Also, Big Trouble in Little China. You know what I mean? Like, a director who has a pinnacle is great, but everything right around that pinnacle is also great. Right. You know, like...
M. Night Shyamalan, you know, of course he peaked at Avatar, but you know, he also, there's some lesser known, you know, Sixth Sense, kind of his worst, but...
Yeah. I will say M. Night Shyamalan, to go on that rabbit hole.
Oh boy.
His biggest crime is that he made his best movie first. Like...
Right.
He has made some really good movies, but... It's all paling. I mean, he made an outstanding debut movie, and that was his biggest
He really
crime.
Shot himself
he
in the
really
foot.
Did. It was all rolling downhill after that. But this, I have heard, I remember Shaolin Soccer was sort of a cult movie in the U.S., and I'm really curious about that. I really like what he made here, because this movie is insanely unique. I've never seen anything like this movie.
It is. Can we talk a little more about, like, the serious nature?
Yeah.
Like, the serious parts of this movie? Because, like, honestly, it kind of hit, like, emotionally.
How so?
Well, like, there's mainly, like, it's small things, you know? It's not, like, I did not shed tears. But, like, the lollipop was really like a big thing. Like, you know, he didn't want anything to do with her because he'd kind of failed at rescuing Lollipop Girl. And then he meets her again and doesn't realize it's the same person and is a total dick.
They steal ice cream from her. Dude, when they steal ice cream and get on that cable car and he's laughing and drooling ice cream, that is the funniest shit I've ever seen. And I think at the point where I go, what the hell is this movie? But you're right, that going from that all the way through to the end, where they meet up again and sort of have a, you know, a reconnection, like,
And they revert back to their kid selves.
Dude, that's such a great shot.
A new start for them.
Right. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful story.
And I also with that character, I love the fact that he was told he was the chosen one by some very clear like scam artist who's just
a homeless guy
trying to sell some but then he is the actual chosen one. And then they do a, I don't know if it was a sequel tease or not, with that, like, him showing the other books, like, yeah. Oh, I can teach you other martial arts. But I thought either way, that's fun. That's like, not, oh, he's still continuing his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the, I like that there's a weird, like, thing in Chinese kung fu movies where kung fu is magic. And that it also, like, ropes in, like, Buddhism in this movie. Like, oh, being a Buddhist is like being a magician. And, like, when he leaps off the bird.
Yes.
It's so crazy. And, like, Buddha's in the clouds. And then he comes down and just slaps that enormous handprint. It's so...
And then the handprint in the wall is the...
It's so good.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. I love it. But, yeah, like, all of that stuff is ridiculous. And then it flips and you have the lollipop store. You have the landlord and landlady talking about their son who was killed.
Mm-hmm.
You have the three... Donut, the tailor, I don't remember the third one. The three who were fighting to save the three town.
Retired,
right.
Kung fu guys.
And when they were killed, it's like this real moment, you know, like,
yeah.
And then even in the weird mystical part where Sing is, he's the cocoon. Where he's been almost killed.
And then the butterfly.
That should have been the cheesiest, dumbest thing. And when they show the butterfly coming out of the cocoon, I'm like, yes. It is cheesy. It is cliche. It is a heavy-handed metaphor. And I love it. I loved that it worked for me.
He knows what he's doing.
Yes. It's great. It's a great movie. I'm going to shout out Julianne Eggold from Mouse and Weens because she pointed me in this direction. And Weens, thank you so much for making me finally watch this 17-year-old movie. I loved it. Austin?
Yes, I loved it too. Thank you.
I'm so glad we got to see it before it left Netflix.
and if more listeners could point us in directions of like, oh, hey, based off what you like, you would like this, or I like this, or you should watch this.
Absolutely.
That would be awesome.
Especially like kind of cult movies like this that I may have missed. I've talked about it before. This is an 04 movie. Mm-hmm. You guys were small. I missed so much stuff in these time periods.
See, I've never even heard of this movie.
And for you, this isn't a zeitgeist movie that everybody talks about. But now that I've seen it, it's like, why isn't everybody talking about this movie? So yeah, there's blind spots for little gems like this, foreign movies, cult movies, that I would love more heads up on stuff like that. Not guaranteeing I'm going to love them all this much, but, you know, blind spots need to be corrected, I think.
Yeah.
Huge recommended on this. I know it's left Netflix by the time you're hearing this. Seek it out somewhere. It is well worth your time.
I'm going to go further than a recommendation and say that I recommend all Stephen Chow.
Wow.
Without even seeing sight all unseen. Of it. Wow. That I'm is ready.
And then you find out like he has one that is just blatantly racist. And like, whoa, Austin.
He directed a menstrual show.
That's minstrel, not menstrual show. That'd
be a very different movie.
Very, very different.
And less offensive. I would prefer to watch a menstrual show than...
I don't really want to watch either, but, you know.
All right.
Let's move on to shoutouts. What do you got this week?
All right, well, I have a singular YouTube video, because it is that good, by Cynical Reviews. I stumbled upon this video. I wasn't even subscribed to this guy before, but he talks about, like, niche kind of things, in depth. This is, like, a 30-minute video, and it's all about Sia, the Australian singer, and her new movie... music.
I've heard about which this movie.
Is horrible I and offensive heard. And yes. for all sorts of reasons. But basically, it's the story of an autistic character. Caricature. I'm saying she's very offensive. It's
right.
It's just like a ridiculous portrayal. And then on top of that, there's like very serious, incorrect things that they have in this movie. Like at one point, the main character Music goes into a meltdown, and their way of solving that problem is to have a fully grown man tackle her to the ground.
That sounds about right.
And smother her until she calms down.
Is there a problem with that?
You know, I don't know if there's a history of anything, like, possible violence that could be caused, but, yeah, ultimately, do not watch that movie, but watch the video, because it goes in depth, it's very well researched, and, like, the narration is just, it takes you through the story of how bad this movie is, so yeah, I liked his review, his take.
You know, there are musicians who can do multiple things, like act and write and even probably direct and be successful in different film. Some musicians should just remain musicians. Some people need to just figure out if they should stay in their lane or if
she used to cover her eyes with her wig. She should have just covered her mouth.
Well, you know. Yeah. Right. I've heard some stuff about that movie. It's nothing I really had interest in seeing anyway.
Most people wouldn't.
I think if nobody had mentioned that movie, I think it's one of those cases where people complaining about that movie probably got more people to watch that movie than otherwise would have. And I just think it's one of those things that would have just gone away and everybody would have just gone. Yeah, it was kind of an offensive piece of garbage. Don't bother.
Well, that's kind of why I'm recommending this one video, because I've been following this for a while.
Yeah.
And Cynical Reviews, he just, like, summed it all up. It's like a summary of both the movie and the reaction to the movie. And it's...
Yeah.
You wouldn't like need to see anything or read anything else about, like, it's the whole story right there.
Yeah.
And then you can just... forget about
that's
it.
That's how I'm approaching
and go about your day.
The Snyder Cut and Wonder Woman 1984. I'm not going to watch these things, but I'll watch like people talking about like the production of them, why they're such absolute hot garbage fires, and the things that are wrong with the things around them.
If you're not going to like something, don't waste your time
with it. But somebody like Red Letter Media, I watch their Justice League thing.
Right.
Because I like those guys and they actually
have and if a, someone's a, gonna watch a 4-hour cut of a movie to review, I mean you might as well.
Right. And they actually are really smart about film and talking about it and also like making fun of it, but also saying like this thing has merit here and here and there. You know, so
right.
Yeah, a good reviewer, a good essay person on even bad movies is worth watching, I think.
I agree. What are you shouting out
today? I am shouting out my buddy David Ginsberg and his podcast Tales from the Fandom. I am on an episode as we're recording this. It dropped today. And that's part of the reason it's bouncing around my head that I have not given David a shout out and I need to. David is a super nice guy. And his show is about fandoms in the way that fandoms should be portrayed. It's not people going on there and whining about, I don't like this because it's not Star Wars from when I was a kid and this and that. This is people going on and talking about things that they love.
A celebration.
It is a celebration of things. Exactly right. He has all kinds of guests on there. He's had friends of mine, people I know on there. He has people I've never heard of, but are like super creative. He has a lot of cosplayers on there. You know, it's not just like other podcasters and those creative types. It's cosplay people who build costumes and do all this.
That's such an intensive labor.
Dude, it really... I'm not into cosplay at all, but... Dude, like, mad props to people who build these insane costumes, man.
Similarly related, furries. Do you know how expensive their suits are? Yeah. It blows my mind. Anyway.
It's wild.
All of that, like,
well, you're getting... all those butt plug tails. Like, that's what it's all about, right? But, no, sorry to do this during your plug, David, but...
Oh, God! Like,
no, David's show, it's about just that. It's a celebration of things. It's people going on there talking about Star Wars. Did you like it? Did you hate it? Whatever. This is why I like the franchise as a whole. I went on there, I talked about the Breaking Bad universe.
Ooh.
And we broke that down. Game of Thrones, warts and all, here's what I like about it. And we talked about Usagi Yojimbo, the comic and soon to be like Netflix series.
I did not know it was being a Netflix series.
It is being adapted to a Netflix series. Stan Sakai is involved in that. So, but
well, yeah,
it's a. I had a really good time talking to David because it was. It is just so positive. And I think if you want to hear about fandoms and franchises in a positive way, if you are like me and you just get so exhausted by people saying they're fans of things and doing nothing but complaining about that thing, check out Tales from the Fandom. David does a great job of keeping everything in a positive light on that show.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of David, but you know, he does some things and you know, maybe I'm not even really a fan, and you know
it's really ruined my earlier adulthood what's happened to his show.
Sign my petition to recast David.
I want the last 100 episodes taken out of canon of
the female reboot was really weird.
Anyway, on that note, now that we've ruined these recommendations, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It helps our visibility, and it helps us grow the show, and it helps us recommend things like Kung Fu Hustle to a wider audience.
Yes. Another way to help us grow is to tell people about us. Spread the word. We, similar to Kung Fu, are magic. And if you know about us, you will gain special abilities. So it's really in your best interest to spread the word.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's in our best interest, too. You can help us get successful enough to move out of Pigsty Alley, where we live.
That's right. We have to pick special times to record so gangsters aren't interrupting.
That's right. Austin, what's your social media? Oh, wait. Movie. We got next week's movie.
That's right. It's my pick, and I am subjecting us to a very interesting movie. Io. It's a sci-fi Netflix original.
I've
talked to you about it before. Yeah, it's about the story of humanity leaving Earth because of natural disaster and this one young woman who is caught up in the mass exodus and might miss the last flight off of the planet.
Okay.
So that's the story, and I think it fails in some ways, succeeds in others. Either way, it's really interesting, really beautiful, and I want to check it out.
Look, this is the best way to get me to watch Netflix original movies anymore, is to make me do it through the podcast. Netflix is so hit, they do some stuff really great.
And it's impossible to tell.
Exactly right. All their trailers look great. You know, like that George Clooney thing came out a couple months ago, and I thought it looked really good, and I'm just like, man, I don't know if I want to. I only have 3 hours. Do I want to spend two of it watching a movie that might suck? You know? So, yeah, I never know. But I am looking forward to finding this one out.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting episode. So...
You've seen it before.
Yes, I'm returning to this. You are brand new.
All right.
Yeah.
What's your social media handles?
So for social media, I am austin.n.rude at TikTok and austin.nrude and old who review, not old horror review, not old horror view.
No, old horror view.
I review old horrors. and those last two were on Twitter. This is a mess of an episode. What is your social media? One
star, would not eat here again. I am at Phil Rude on Twitter, at PhilRude75 on Instagram, and PhilRude.com. You can get all our episodes there and see what else I'm up to. Austin, would you like to read the credits?
I wouldn't, but I'm going to do it anyway. We did everything ourselves.
There you have it. We'll see you next time on The Picture Show.
See ya.